it turns out that kind of how we thought things should work ended up being what a lot of people agreed with too.
Well, hello there and a half. Welcome back to the Wild Business Growth Podcast. This is your place to hear from a new entrepreneur every single Wednesday morning who's turning wild ideas into wild growth. I'm your host, Max Brandstetter, founder and podcast producer at Max Podcasting. And you can email me at max@maxpodcasting.com to save time with your high quality podcast. This is episode 17 plus 9, 179. And today, that math doesn't work, but it's 179. And today's guest is Matt Mullenweg. Matt is the co-founder and founding developer of a little company called WordPress and is also the founder and CEO of Automattic, the holding company behind WordPress, WooCommerce, Tumblr, Pocket Cast, and many other companies. Matt is one of the brightest minds in the business world and beyond, and his baby, WordPress, now powers over 43% of the top websites in the world. In this interview, we talk the WordPress story, the Automattic story, how to get started with new habits, as difficult as they may seem, how Matt views inspiration like a buffet, and everything from how 104 chicken McNuggets fits into the equation to a keyboard that's just a bit different than the one you're using. Probably. It is Photomat. Enjoy the show. Alrighty, we are here with Matt Mullenweg. You know him from WordPress, Automattic, plenty of other things, but I know him because whenever I order food and they ask for your name, I always say Max and spell out M-A-X because they always think it's Matt. But this is Matt, M-A-T-T. Matt, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing great. We're just going to spell things the entire time. But really excited to dive into your story and the things that you've created and you've helped so many businesses and the internet create. And you know, my website and pretty much feel like everyone's website I know runs through WordPress. So thanks a billion. Before we get into that world, you and I have something in common that probably will make people stop listening right away, but we're just going to roll with it. We both don't drink coffee. Where does that stem from on your end?
That's a good question. I don't know. I've just never really been into the taste. I really love tea. I try not to have too much caffeine in my life. Like, I try to save it for times when, like, I really need it. So kind of few and far between. Just because caffeine is a very powerful drug. And I already have enough vices. So I was like, I don't need one more.
I'm with you, Vice City. But I could never get past the smell, which is probably going to make people jump off once again. But I also grew up, both my parents never drank it. So kind of a unique category, but it's encouraging to hear that somebody who's built businesses like you have can run without coffee too. So I think that's a good trend there.
What's funny is actually, I do love the smell.
Interesting. Okay, so it's the smell, not the taste. And coffee is something lots of people thrive on throughout college. And in your case, you start at college, and then you start going away from college. You kind of, the work world was calling your name pretty early on, freshman year for you. What was your family's reaction when you started going the work route as opposed to continuing your studies?
They were cautiously supportive. So I dropped out. It was between my sophomore and junior year to move to San Francisco because I got this job offer from a company called CNET. And I was able to like convince my mom it was okay, partially because they were a public company. They had healthcare, you know, a nice office. She really wanted me to go work for Google instead because they had free food. But I was like, no, this will be better.
What's more important, really?
Yeah. But then what was actually a little bit tougher was after just a year at that company, I was going back to them and being like, well, I'm no longer going to be at a public company. I'm no longer going to have healthcare. I'm no longer going to have all these things that convinced you it because I'm going to go off and start my own thing. So, but they've always been very supportive, my whole family really. And generally what they say is just like, hey, you know, they'll say their concerns or whatever, but it always ends with whatever happens, we got your back.
That's great. They, even without the coffee drinking. No, it's always nice to have that support system there. In your mind, internally, were there any points along that those first couple years of when you were kind of pure work world, that is a heck of a tongue twister, pure work world, where you started to doubt yourself and thought, you know, maybe I should have finished college and, you know, got a job after?
That's a good question. So I do love the idea of just focusing on learning. So my nostalgia for returning to college, it's more around that. It just seems like an incredible luxury. Like if I go on vacation, I love to read a lot of books. So being able to do that as a full-time job, I think would be pretty cool. And I definitely would wonder if I maybe would have stayed if I went to a different college. But you know, the job offer I got was really great. You know, I was making as much, maybe I think it was even more than my dad was making at the time. And I got to move to San Francisco, which is now one of the coolest cities in the world. So it was kind of a no-brainer at the time. When I look back at just more of that like time to learn, I think I might not have appreciated when I was in it.
So let's get to what came a little bit later, which is WordPress and Automattic. And I know you're a huge fan of puns. It's across your businesses, across your handles. So appreciate the Matt and Automattic there. I personally think it would be better Automaxic, but that's just me. WordPress. So you started working with this thing called B2 Codebase, which really rolls off the tongue. What had positioned you in that point to start working as a developer and work on kind of the behinds of scenes of websites?
Well, I'd started building websites in high school, actually just for local musicians or folks around town, small businesses. It was how I earned income other than I played the saxophone, so I made some money doing that. And then I made money building these computers and websites for people. So it had been something I'd done since a teenager. And just every year, as I'd read tutorials or buy O'Reilly books or just try to learn more and more and get a little bit better at it. But none of the software at the time really fit my mental model for how publishing and managing a site should work. I guess my brain just worked a little differently. And so I thought there could be something easier, at least for me. I don't know if it was going to be easier for other people. But, you know, from the beginning, with my co-founder, Mike Little, who was in England, like a bunch of people came together just because we all kind of felt the same thing. Like it could be easier, it could be more intuitive. And it turns out that kind of how we thought things should work ended up being what a lot of people agreed with too. And so, you know, WordPress has had a really great run since those early days of gaining in market share, even though we have much bigger and better financed proprietary competitors.
I appreciate the effort on the easiness, because it totally, I think that when I think of WordPress, that's the main thing that comes to mind. Like I remember when my dad first met, he's the one that introduced the term company, the platform WordPress to me. As soon as I started digging into it, it was just kind of this, wow, like it makes things really easy to create even a website, which I was pretty young. Like at that age, a website seemed like such a crazy complicated thing. I just figured that you needed to use all sorts of crazy code to put it up there. And then I was introduced to this thing called WordPress, and it's like, bam, you put in some words, hit the publish button. You can have blog posts, you can have different pages for it. So it blows my mind. You should check out this company, WordPress. No, I'm just kidding. that focus on easiness goes such a long way. But how did that take shape in the early days? Like, what were some key steps early on that helped the actual platform user interface of WordPress look like what it is today?
Yeah, I think a lot of the platforms at the time were really focused on developers. And so they think a lot about the developer experience or making things easy for developers, which also meant sometimes like they changed a lot of the code in a way that wasn't backwards compatible in major releases. The sites would require a lot of maintenance to run. And so what we decided early on was that we were going to work extra hard as developers to make it so users never have to think about those things. And so we started with something called the famous 5-minute install that made the installation really streamlined. Then later we introduced the concept of plugins and themes that made it easy to modify the site without changing any code in a way that made it still easy to upgrade, that we made upgrades automatic. And so all of these steps have really been towards that, something we're still working on today, which is making it so you don't have to think about WordPress at all. You can just set it up and it can go on autopilot, yet remain safe, secure, up to date, and always getting new features is the ideal. I think we're there for a lot of users, but to be honest, we have so far to go. WordPress is still probably too challenging for billions of people out there. So we, you know, with every single release, try to make it just a little bit easier.
When did you start to see an uptick in users?
The best uptick was probably around, there was a ton of competitors at the time, and the dominant one was called MovableType. And MovableType sort of changed their licensing and pricing in a way that their user base really didn't like. Of course, all the users had blogs, so they would, you know, all blog about why they didn't like it. And there started to be a good number moving to WordPress from that. And fortune favors the prepared. So we had just released our MovableType importer. We'd done a bunch of upgrades on the platform. And so we'd made it pretty easy for people to move over. And so people found it easier to move over than to upgrade to the new version of MovableType. And that was definitely an early pivot point for us.
And how did you come up with the philosophy that this was actually going to be free for users?
I guess that was there from the very beginning because it was open source. The software that was the base that WordPress was built on was also free and open source, that B2 Cafe log you mentioned earlier. So yeah, it was just always, that's very key to me, is I believe that software should be free and should also give people freedom. So that combination of things is just what I've worked on my whole career.
So there's an emphasis on free and freedom. And then you take a look forward and you've built something that, what's the latest number? Something like 40% of the internet uses WordPress. And you have thousands of people involved on the automatic side as well. What started helping you to think big and bring this into reality as, oh my God, we can really impact a crazy ton of people with what we're doing here?
You know, it was very much not like sitting down and coming up with a master plan for world domination or anything, but much more just constantly reviewing and adjusting what we were doing and looking back and saying, okay, here's what has worked well, here's what's broken, here's what users are asking for. And then just a relentless iteration. You know, I think that we're very much a story of making it a little bit better every day, every month, every year, and getting a few more users just very gradually. But then, you know, WordPress is now 18 years old. So doing that continuously over 18 years, you get like a compound interest that eventually adds up to be quite large. But in the early days, I don't think anyone would have predicted, including us, that it would ever be this large.
It's the rule of 72 in terms of people in the internet. It's a beautiful thing when you see that start to compound. And compounding that even further, WordPress is one of the companies, or I guess technically a couple, two or three or more of the companies that make up Automattic, emphasis on the mat, as mentioned earlier. But what inspired you to take this approach of more of a holding company to Automattic?
I think that was just that we felt like the opportunity was so large for revolutionizing how people worked on the web. And so, you know, we made the move to e-commerce in 2015, and that's gone really well. And these sort of divisions or teams within the company have just really grown up. You know, we have over 300 people working on WooCommerce now. So at some point, it starts to look like its own company. And so we just wanted to really treat it as such, try to recruit executives that were, if this were an independent company raising money with a valuation, the same type of executives we'd be trying to get. So that's what led to it. Also just given us a lot of flexibility where we can invest in things, we can buy things, we can create them from scratch, we can spin off stuff. So we have a lot of corporate flexibility, which has been really nice. There's been many times in the history in the early days where I wish we would have invested in a company or merged with someone or done something, but we felt a little boxed in by our structure. But over time, as we were able to prove our ability to grow the business, you know, we just got more and more leeway from our investors and from our employees as well to try stuff further afield from how we originally started. So that's where we are now. We have a lot of trust from our investors and board and everything to take some experiments. And not all of them are going to work, but we've proven that more of them will work over time than not.
Definitely a good thing to have more working than not. But that's a really fun change there when you think about going from somebody focused on one company to somebody focused on growing in and maybe experimenting at the start with so many different types of companies and lines of business. What's your philosophy when it comes to potential acquisitions or even companies you're investing in?
My philosophy is largely things I want to see in the world for investments. And then for acquisitions, you know, I would say we try to think what would complement our other businesses. So what would both be an amazing standalone business and would complement the other things that we do.
I love the, I want to invest and be involved with things that I want to see in the world, which when it comes down to it, everybody should think that way in terms of where they put their time and money and commitment there. How is your role as CEO, how does that compare to the early days when it's a much smaller company? What's the biggest thing you've had to learn in order to help lead a growing and, you know, 1,000+ person company?
I would say it's a lesson I'm still learning, which is just how to communicate clearly.
Well, you sound very clear, Matt.
Oh, thank you. Well, I think it's something you can always be better at. So,
yeah.
And for me also, it's a lot of focusing on communicating clearly in writing. So not just speaking, but how do you write in a way that's gets people aligned and on the same page and also motivating?
What's a good trick that you've learned for how to communicate so clearly with words in writing? Which I could have said that much quicker, ironically.
For speaking, I think it helps to have thought about things beforehand, including to have written things down. And it's also incredibly enlightening to listen to recordings of yourself. Very painful, right? Because our voice sounds different on a recording than it does to us. And sometimes you're like, oh, what's all these ums and ahs and verbal fillers? And how many times can I say like, you know, so.
Well, I can, let me know after this and I can help you out with the editing, but no.
So these, no, leave it in so people can hear. These, even knowing them, it takes a while of work to remove them from your speech. And for writing, I would say that it's really all about editing and having someone else edit it and look at it and give you feedback. When I'm doing just by myself, I try to read it out loud, see how it sounds. It usually helps me find sentences that are awkward, but nothing really beats, you know, tossing it to a friend and having them edit it and then iterating on that. Writing is like maybe 20% about putting the ideas down on paper and 80% about the iteration afterwards. And I think people get that reversed. They try to spend 80% of their time writing and then make the editing and iteration like kind of a last minute thing. But really, it's for great writing, it's all about the editing.
How's that editing or iteration? How is that parallel to what you've built and are building with WordPress and Automattic?
Well, with WordPress, we have built-in features for it, but I do want to make it easier to share drafts with people, not users on your blog. So that is a feature that's coming soon. On the Automattic side, yeah, I would say that just in entrepreneurship in general, people overvalue the idea and undervalue the execution and the time it takes. So everyone has often the same ideas, or even if you have a really unique idea, like not that it doesn't matter. It just seldom is the thing that makes a successful business. And you can look at any business. And in fact, what they're usually successful about is not the original idea they started with, which again, it's not about that original idea. So I just always advise people to start. That's the number one thing, because you're never going to be able to predict once you start where it will take you. That's how I think about it.
And in hindsight now, like what happens? How would an entrepreneur know that, oh man, this is it. This is the thing. Like, I don't care what we started with. This is the thing that we were meant to build and grow and provide for people.
I don't know. What would be your answer there?
Well, one, I think personally you have to be passionate about it, but I think even more important is when you truly see an influx of people reaching out to you to do business with you one way or another. I think it's once you start seeing that uptick in terms of people truly invested, but it needs to tie back to something that you're truly passionate about doing as well.
Yeah, I would agree with that. So there you go. You already have the answer.
Thank you. You're a master podcast guest because you just let the host answer and then agree with it. that's a very savvy move there. If you want to be a savvy podcast host for a podcast for your business, I can help you out. Hit me up at max@maxpodcasting.com. I have learned a tip or trick or two, just two of each, over the course of hosting many, many episodes, as well as guesting, as well as podcast planning, podcast production, podcast promotion, bunch of things in the podcast space. And I can help you be prepared to the point of, hey, what do you do if your guest asks the question you ask right back at you? You have to be prepared for moments like that. But really, if you are interested in a podcast for your business and you're ready to rock it on the audio waves, hit me up at max@maxpodcasting.com. Now, let's learn more about how Matt finds the inspiration and energy and everything in between to do all that he does. Let's switch gears a little bit. Let's get to inspiration and creativity. So kind of more you on the personal side, what you do to stay creative, stay inspired. And you have met through your journey and are friends with and partners with so many amazing entrepreneurs out there, many of which I know listeners of this podcast are fans of as well. But in terms of you actually developing as an entrepreneur and as a CEO, who would you say are some of the names that rise to the top as being instrumental and inspirational to you?
I get a lot of inspiration from Charlie Munger and his speeches. He's a Warren Buffett's partner. I get a lot of inspiration from the books of Nassim Taleb, such as Fooled by Randomness, Black Swan, Anti-Fragile, the books of Dan Pink, the books of Dan Ariely, who's a behavioral economist, and the sort of CEOs that we would all hear about, whether I know them personally or not. I just try to, almost like a buffet, look at what they say or write or the profiles of them and just cherry pick what seems like interesting aspects. So very inspired by how Tim Cook allegedly starts his workday, 4:30 in the morning.
Allegedly.
whatever. It doesn't matter whether it's true or not. It's like, what can I take from that? Like, I'm not going to start at 4:30 in the morning, but what can I take from that and how I want to structure my day? Or I remember I read something once about Jack Dorsey, like Mondays were about product management and Tuesdays were about marketing and Wednesdays, he had kind of a structure to every week. And again, I'm not going to do that exactly. It's not right for me. But what can I learn from that? And what would be my version of those types of structures? So yeah, I'm just always reading those things. I also try to remember, this is true of press and generally, like no one's as good as their best press or as bad as their worst press. The truth is always somewhere in the middle. What's the other saying? Every saint has a past, every sinner has a future. That's true for press coverage as well.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. What does your structure look like?
Funny you ask that, because I have actually maybe the least structured week that you could imagine. So how I've set up Automatic is where the individual businesses have a lot of structure, but what I'm doing is often moving between them in a way which I try to get pretty open so that I can have the space to spend more time in a place where it needs it. So that might even mean that I take over a CEO of a business for 2 or 4 or 6 months if needed. So I need to have some flexibility in my schedule to be able to do that. And then for that time when I'm there, we're going to have a very regimented schedule. But then afterwards, hopefully I can go back to where it's a bit more space and I can focus on being reactive to the needs of my colleagues.
What's that? I'm not going to let you say What do you think, Max, this time? But what's that sign to you that, okay, business is running smoothly again?
Yeah, I would think about it in three broad categories, which would be people, product, and revenue. So the people are, you know, how's the feedback from the teams? Are they hiring great folks? Are they retaining great folks? And are they managing out poor performers? And it's the first thing you have to focus on, because if you don't get that right, nothing else matters. On the product, it's different for every product, but what are the key metrics of health for it? So what's the speed of iteration? How fast are we shipping improvements to users? How long does it take to do something easy? So how long does it take to do something hard? Like, are easy things taking 2 months? Okay, that's bad. And then finally, the revenue. You know, ultimately, we have some connection. There's some point where we're going to ask a customer to open up their wallet and pay us. And so how are we doing that? How are we marketing? How are we billing? You know, there could be a lot of logistics there, but also, like, how's the pricing models? So all of the input there shows up in bottom line growth. And then, of course, things that contribute to that, like margin, profits, et cetera. So, you know, those are the business is actually, the revenue is probably the easiest because it's very objective and it's a very standardized way to look at that across the businesses. The people and product, I look more for different signals, including using the products myself for how that's going.
You just have a natural knack for simplifying things and making them easier to understand and easier to use. I mean, that's obviously demonstrated in WordPress when you actually, if you're somebody who uses it, but it comes through in your words as well. That can flow through outside of work as well. So in terms of hobbies or starting new habits, I know there's maybe one or two habits that you've, or hobbies that you've had over the years. What tips do you have for somebody who's interested in starting a new hobby?
You know, whatever method you use, whether it's there's an app called Streaks, or I think it's Seinfeld who famously has to, like, put a calendar and draw X every day you do something.
Right. Which my fiance Dane and I are currently binging through in record time. So extremely relevant.
Cool. Yeah, that I find pretty effective. Now, the key for me at getting good at that, like, maybe there's some people for whom, like, they can be perfect on, you know, doing something every day. But for me, I would get so demotivated if I missed a day, I'd get really bummed. So I actually focus a lot less on how long the streak is and a lot more like, you know, if some reason I miss a day, just being kind to myself and forgiving myself and then getting back on the horse the next day. So if I'm not as harsh on myself, it's easier for me to restart because I'm not like feeling the crush of trying to get to that 100-day streak again or something. I'm just like, all right, well, this week it'll be 6 out of 7 instead of 7 out of 7. Or maybe this month it's 25 out of 30. That's still pretty good. That's better than what it was before, which was like 0 out of 30.
That's pretty, rounds up to 100%. We'll give it to you. It makes a lot of sense that, especially when you're trying something new, like running, for example, you can't just expect to like run a marathon your first time running after like not running in 6 months or like never running before. But if you take things a little bit at a time and have some breaks in there, it's a lot more digestible.
Well, you make a good point that like for physical activity, in fact, the rest and recovery is as important. So
yeah,
I do have a daily exercise goal, but I'm pretty flexible with what I fill it with. So it's not the same exercise every day. Maybe one day it's like taking a long walk. One day it's a run. One day it's weights. One day it's like, so I try to mix it up. Basically, I'm just trying to do something like movement in my body, but I'm pretty open-minded for what that is.
What is a hobby that you've picked up? Doesn't have to be something you're still doing, but something that probably your younger self would be completely thrown off and surprised that you actually stuck with this.
Yeah, probably the thing I would have never predicted was in the pandemic, I got an RV. And
I mean, who didn't? No, I'm just kidding.
Going around with it. Yeah, a lot of people did actually. They're very hard to get. Yeah, I got it pretty early, like probably like March or April of 2020. And just really loved being in nature and really loved like modifying it and fixing it. It's always breaking, by the way. So all these just became pretty fun. And then driving it around, like it's such a beast to drive, but got to enjoy that as well. And then there's a whole RV culture of like, you know, RV parks and dealing with trash and waste. It makes you a lot more conscious about, you know, how you're storing food and how you're using things, how you're cooking, how you're cleaning, and what you need in life, you know? So your whole life can kind of reduce to a couple hundred square feet, not even really, and be quite comfortable. And you get a lot of joy from it. So that also reminded me just how much I love and miss being in nature. But the RV, I never would have predicted. My friends still think it's the most ridiculous thing because I'm very much like a city guy in a lot of ways.
You should just drive the RV all through downtown San Francisco and Manhattan and just, you know, all of the urban environments and just and see what looks you get.
I did drive it around San Francisco for a while. And people would take pictures. It was pretty funny.
All right, so let's wrap up with some rapid fire Q&A. You ready for it, Matt?
Born ready.
All right, born ready. Your whole life has worked for this. All right, let's get wild. You've been all around the world, as you alluded to with the RV, but you probably didn't drive the RV to Antarctica, which I don't know if I'm saying right, Antarctica, but you've been to Antarctica. What is a tip for staying warm in maybe the coldest place in the world? I think the coldest place in the world.
I heard this somewhere, and I think it's so true. I say it a lot. There's no bad weather, only bad clothing.
Oh, that's great.
So I think it's just all about getting the right gear. And in particular in Antarctica, it's about layering. It's interesting. Like if you're walking around, you can actually get quite warm. And I would go down to almost my base layer. If I was doing like a 10K or like a really strenuous cross-country ski or something, climbing. But, you know, once you stop moving, you get cold really, really quickly. And then, of course, if you're sleeping overnight or something, you want like a double sleeping bag. And so the good news is this is all really well. It's probably like the best time ever to do this stuff because, you know, your local REI, et cetera, has everything. So it's just really about planning and preparing. And I guess if there was one tip, I would just say, avoiding cotton and, you know, since you can find wool or synthetic stuff is really, really fantastic for outdoors.
I'm kind of picturing from a Christmas Story, the like super puffy layers on layers and layers of winter gear. I imagine Antarctica, it's like 17 layers of clothing, but that is true. We control what you can control. All right. What would you order at a very nice tequila bar, except the tequila bar is out of Casa Dragones? What are you ordering?
You know what I've been really enjoying and would probably try to get is, it's not a tequila, but it's a sotol, S-O-T-O-L. It's similar plants, but grows in Texas and other places. And man, they're really good. It's kind of like a cross between a tequila and a mezcal.
I would just see
if they had any sotol on the menu and go for it.
Is there any... I don't think I've ever tried that before, but it's right. I love tequila and mezcal, so it's right down my alley. Are there any brands that you know of that top of mind?
That I really enjoyed is called Desert Door, and it's from Texas.
On the consumption note, I believe you're the first person I've ever spoken to who has consumed 104 chicken nuggets in one sitting. How do you get yourself to consume such a large number like that?
The chicken nugget, I can't say I'd recommend that one.
That's not part of your daily habit tracking.
No, use that as a cautionary tale. Like, I don't know if I'd recommend more than really 20 McNuggets should be the maximum allowed by law.
I'm just full thinking about it. Sounds good. Reminds me when Giannis, I think, did 50 after the Bucks won the championship, and he had less than half than you did. Other things that may or may not be recommended, you've tried out some different sleep schedules, including, I forget the name of it. There was, like in college when my friends first told me about it, they called it the Superman sleep schedule of sleeping every few hours just for a little bit instead of like a full night's sleep.
Yeah, the Uberman.
Uberman. All right. Pretty close. Need the translation. But what was your biggest takeaway from trying out a different sleep routine like that?
I loved it. Probably my biggest takeaway was it's possible first, which I didn't really believe before I did it, that the body adapts in really interesting ways. And then finally, that there's a societal norm to when we sleep and how we sleep and everything that's really tough to break out of. So I feel like even though I got a lot more done when I was on that cycle, I, you know, was a little more disconnected and isolated from just the normal circadian cycles of society. And so today I'm just on a very normal schedule.
And last one, and what's your one line or one phrase sales pitch to get somebody to try out a Dvorak keyboard?
Yeah, just for listeners, Dvorak is just a different layout. So instead of like being ASDF, the letters are AOEU, as just one example. Most of the keys are in different places. The one line is that you're probably going to be typing the rest of your life. So if you could be 40 or 50% more efficient and more comfortable doing it, you should. It's worth the investment. So there's a switching cost, obviously. It's like learning a new instrument, like learning, maybe learning clarinet if you play the saxophone. But let's call it a month of solid training. You could be back to your old speed and you'll have a lifetime of comfort.
I'll type to that. Matt, thank you so much. This has been fantastic. Really, really appreciate all you do and just how you make things more easy and free and wonderful for so many people and business owners out there. There's a variety of ways to connect with you, but what's your favorite place for people to follow you or learn more about you?
Definitely my blog, which is ma.tt. But I'm Photomat, Photomatt, on Tumblr, Instagram, and Twitter. So follow me on whichever one of those you use. And I try to share good stuff all the time.
Fantastic. And then last thing, stage is yours. Final thoughts, whatever you want, just kind of a parting word of advice here. Take it away.
Oh, I would say there's actually a layout slightly more efficient than Dvorak. So if you're thinking about it.
So there goes the sales pitch.
Yeah, check out Colemak, Colemak. If you're going from scratch from QWERTY, I would go straight to Colemak. I didn't know about it when I switched like 15 years ago. So, and it's not that much better than Dvorak for me to switch. So, but it is way, way, way better than QWERTY. Both are better than QWERTY. So check out Colemak.
Hitting all the key points. Thank you, Matt, for sharing the amazing WordPress Automatic and Beyond and Beyond and Beyond story. And the amazing insights and stories from your personal life as well. And thank you, Wild listeners, for tuning in to another episode. If you want to hear more wild stories like this one, make sure to follow the Wild Business Growth Podcast on your favorite app, including Pocket Cast, Automatic. After you listen on Pocket Cast, of course, tell all your friends about it on Good Pods. And for any help with podcast production, you can learn more at maxpodcasting.com. Until next time, let your business run wild.
Bring on the bongos!